Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for being here and being in this program. I'm not aware of all that you've studied so far, but Mayor sent me a general idea.
Norman, I'm sorry. There's quite a bit of feedback or static coming from your audio. Might be the original sound being on.
Okay. Let me turn that off and see what happens. I can't seem to turn it off. Is the static still there?
Yes, slightly.
Okay. How about now? Better?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, good. The topic for today is presence and persistence, which is always a good topic, right? In terms of the sixth item on the Eightfold Path, right effort, which is a very specific and technical thing in Buddhism. So what I want to do is talk to you a little bit about the traditional teachings of right effort, and then hopefully in dialogue we can see how that can be relevant to your lives and your work. So that's what I want to do. Right effort. So the Eightfold Path, this is number six. And it's usually understood specifically in relation to meditation. So the last three items on the Eightfold Path are right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. And these are the three elements that are required to develop meditation. And the idea is that you need to have a certain degree of concentration, intensity of mind, in order to really understand the fundamental truth of this life, which is Buddhist wisdom. And that's the first item in the Eightfold Noble Path, right view. So, in other words, the path goes round and round. We start with a certain amount of wisdom, and then we go through all the eight items of the path, which increases our wisdom, and then we go round and round again, so that we never stop developing the Eightfold Path. It's not 1 to 8, it's actually 1 to 8 and back to 1, round and round in a circle. So in this case, we're talking about effort, and we're going to talk about it because the tradition talks about it specifically with regard to meditation. We're going to look at it that way, understanding that it also is a bigger category than just its application to meditation. So effort, right effort, is a kind of diligence, right? A kind of devotion, a commitment, a stick-to-itiveness, a persistence to be consistent in making the effort to be mindful. In other words, to just pay attention all the time, to be awake, aware in your living. And then, if you're on the meditation cushion, you're doing that too, and you're intensifying that mindfulness till it becomes strong concentration, and then your practice goes deeper, you really see impermanence, you really see that there's no way other than this to live, so you're committed to the practice of awareness, of being alive intentionally, consciously, as a way of life. When they talk about right effort, the usual thing they say in the tradition is that there are four elements to right effort. And you could say in English that the four elements are prevention, abandoning, cultivation, and maintenance. So this has to do with what they call in Buddhism wholesome and unwholesome dharmas. Wholesome meaning the qualities and states of mind you want to encourage because they're conducive to the path, and then states of mind and qualities that you want to discourage because they're not conducive to the path. So you want to prevent those unwholesome dharmas from arising if they're not there, and if they are there, you want to abandon them. You want to slough them off, if they happen to be there. And then the idea is that once those are sloughed off, we have naturally in us what's wholesome, what's good. So once we slough off what's standing in the way of that, what's good appears. So we want to then cultivate, that's the third one, cultivate what's good. And the fourth one is, once what's good is there, we want to maintain it, we want to encourage it. So that's why prevention of something unwholesome that's not there, preventing it from coming, abandoning it when it is there, cultivating what's positive when once it appears, and maintaining that on and on. So here we see that right effort, you know, usually we think of effort as being sort of morally neutral, or just a neutral faculty of, you know, energy or effort or something like that, that doesn't have anything to do with wholesome or unwholesome. But in the Buddhist discourse, it has everything to do with wholesome and unwholesome, because that's what effort is. Effort is encouraging the wholesome and getting rid of the unwholesome. And again, unwholesome and wholesome just means tending toward the path, which is inherently wholesome, or tending away from it. All kinds of, and you can imagine all kinds of behaviors, thoughts, feelings, ways of speaking that you might have that you would inherently know, well, wow, if I think like this, if I talk like this, if I feel like this, this is not leading me toward where I want to be. This is, you know, keeping me chained to my negativity or my suffering. So then it stands to reason that the first thing you would need for right effort is to have the idea, and I bet you that everybody in this program has that idea, or you wouldn't be in the program, the idea being that you do want to cultivate wholesome states of mind and heart, and you do want to let go of unwholesome states of mind and heart. In other words, you have motivation. And you know the difference. You have enough self-reflection to know, okay, I have different states of mind and ways of looking at things that are really not helping. I can see that. And other things that I would like to cultivate. So I have the motivation to do that. I see the difference, and I definitely would like to cultivate what's wholesome and reduce what's unwholesome. So you kind of have to have that motivation and that much understanding and vision to begin with. And then once you have that, you can develop it more, the effort more. So why would you have that motivation? Well, you would have it, I guess, because like you realize that in worst case scenario, your life is a wreck, you know, and you're a mess, and it's unsustainable, and that's obvious. So whether you like it or not, you got to do something. That's the best, in a way, the best kind of motivation, because then you're really motivated, right? But it can doesn't have to be that extreme. It could just be, well, you know, it could be better. It could be better. One way or the other, though, you have that vision, you have that motivation, and you go forth. So then, the first thing you do is you begin to pay attention to your thoughts and emotions and your way you speak and the things you do, and you really become, you know, things that you just took for granted, that's just life or that's just me. Now you start thinking, well, let's just look at this more closely. Let's forget about accepting that it's just the way it is or it's just how I am, and let me just see what's actually going on. And then you notice, wow, yeah, I see that I think this way, and this is not a good way to think. I can't help it at this point, but I can see that where this is leading to me. And I can see the way I speak to people. I can see the way I do things is not really that good. So you just begin to notice that. And you notice that when these things are there, you can abandon them. In other words, rather than validating all kinds of negative ways of thinking and being, you don't need to validate them or justify them or defend yourself. You need to be clear, okay, this is not good. And if it's not good, I don't need to keep it up. So, okay, here it is again, but I don't have to exercise that I can take a step back, let it go. So now you're abandoning that which has arisen. If you can't prevent it, and if it's there, at least you can try your best to let it go. And then when you're doing that enough, and it's not that this is going to be perfect, you're going to abandon all unwholesome things forever and ever. No, it's just a matter of you're going to reduce them and reduce the habit that you have, the grip that you have on them. You're going to reduce them. And once you reduce them, then what's wholesome just comes into view. And you realize, oh, you know, I could think of it that way. And that's better, actually. I feel better when I think of it that way. When I speak this way to people instead of that way, I feel better, and look, they seem to feel better. So I'm having like better interactions with people because my thinking is a little bit different and my speaking is a little bit different. And so then you say, you see that, and that's the cultivation as it appears, and then you try to strengthen it. You try to develop it, which is maintenance. That's the fourth step. So in the discussion of right effort in relation to meditation, and I think this is in a broad sense true even not in meditation, basically, to get down more in detail about this, they say there are five hindrances. These are five aspects of negativity that should be abandoned, and there are five faculties, and these are five positive dharmas or qualities that come into view that we want to strengthen. So now we're getting into the discussion of exactly what is it that we're abandoning and what is it that we're maintaining. So the five hindrances are, number one, as you know, Buddhism has lots of lists, so there must be four kinds of right effort and five hindrances and five faculties. There could be 5,000, but no, there's five. Five hindrances are, number one, being attached to or caught by sense desire. The second one is ill will, or we could maybe just reduce it to general grumpiness. Maybe you've experienced that before. General grumpiness, everything is not good. Laziness is the third one. Restlessness and distraction is the fourth one. And doubt is the fifth one. I'm sure all these things are familiar to you and not at all unknown to you. You could easily identify them in yourself, except when you now name them as the five hindrances, all of a sudden, instead of saying, ah, this is just me, you say, ah, this is the hindrance of grumpiness arising. This is exactly what I want to abandon. So now you have a different attitude about it, right? I think we, like I say, I don't think I need to explain what these five are, other than maybe to say that sense desire, the whole Buddhist discussion of sense desire is a whole conversation in itself. But in this case, maybe we could say obsession with sense desire has to do with one's habit of holding on to pleasant things and wanting to reject unpleasant things, which I think is very common. We all know about that. Everything that's unpleasant, immediately we cringe. Everything that's pleasant, immediately we grab hold of it. So maybe we can say it's that. And then I think we understand what laziness is like. We understand, probably understand all too well, restlessness and distraction. But doubt would here mean, just to say more about that, doubt would be doubting that the path is worthwhile or that it works. Or, if not that, the path is very worthwhile and I really know it works, but I can't do it. I really doubt whether I have the capacity to do it. It's too hard. I keep trying, but I don't get anywhere. I probably can't do it, which is never the case. Or, I could do it, but I don't seem to have the commitment to do it. I don't seem to be serious enough about it. So you could have all those thoughts and feelings, and that's all the hindrance. Instead of taking them seriously, in other words, yeah, that's true, I really am, you say, no, that's the hindrance of doubt. And I know what has to be done with that. I have to abandon that. So then, assuming that you kind of bring these five hindrances into view as hindrances, and you begin to identify them in your own mind and abandon them when they're there, now you can make some effort to cultivate the wholesome faculties, which I think, as I said, come into view when the five hindrances are reduced. When the five hindrances are strong, there are no five faculties. There's no such thing. You know, there's just the distraction and the restlessness. Nothing else exists. So you have to kind of deal with that first. But once you deal with that to some extent and you change your relationship to all that, the five faculties, which are wholesome and tend toward the path, come into view. And the five faculties, and when they're strong enough, they become powers. The five powers, the same qualities, become the five powers. Faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. Those are the five faculties, the five powers. And you can see where these are wholesome factors. I mean, you know, most people would say, wow, you know, faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, wisdom, I never heard of that. Well, what's that? You know, but when you start with grappling with the hindrances, these things suddenly become visible and possible. And these are the things you want to cultivate and encourage and maintain. And as I say, the hindrances are not going to be cleared away forever and ever. It's a lifetime's work. Similarly, the development of the five powers is a lifetime's work. And you, so you begin to sit with more faith, more mindfulness, more concentration in your meditation. And when you have those qualities and the five hindrances, I think in meditation it's not that hard actually to have all five hindrances disappear for a period of time. They might not disappear in living because life's complicated, but in sitting, you know, it might happen where the five hindrances really fall away. And you're just sitting there with mindfulness, with concentration. And then when you're sitting there with mindfulness and concentration, you have a kind of a wisdom that arises in you, a kind of ineffable wisdom, which kind of shows you that your life is not what you thought it was, and your point of view was actually very conditioned and very limited. And somehow or other, there's something else going on here. And in Buddhism, the classical understanding is that you really see impermanence. You really understand that life is impermanent and therefore precious, and every moment is wonderful and it really counts. And every human being and every other kind of being has a magnificence. That's what comes into your heart and mind when you really appreciate in its fullness the Buddhist teaching of impermanence. And then, you know, in the meditation, you can be very happy in that moment. And if you, insofar as you can develop these things in your living, you can also be happy in the course of your daily life and stuff that goes on. Even when difficult things are happening, you can live with some clarity and some kindness. And then when you are at that point, it's very easy to persist and to have strong presence because you're inspired, you're motivated. So that's what the tradition teaches about right effort. That's this fundamental teaching, but a couple of more points to add to that. There's a famous sutra in the Pali Canon called the Sona Sutra. And this is also about effort, and it's about how to tune and balance your effort. So without going through the whole sutra, I'll kind of give you the flavor of it. And I'll use some of the actual words of the sutra, the English translation of some of the words, to give you, because I love these old sutras. They're very amusing and kind of sweet. So one time the Buddha was staying near Rajagraha on Vulture Peak, and this monastic Sona was studying nearby in the woods. There was some kind of a woods nearby. And he was by himself meditating. And he was doing walking meditation. And he was apparently like doing a tremendous effort. I mean, he was really, really, really putting in such effort that his feet were bleeding and the skin was being, you know, split open from his walking meditation. And then it says, and then this thought arose in his mind. He says, I am a disciple of the Buddha, because he's an ordained monastic, you know, and I definitely am trying to do this practice, but I'm definitely not completely there yet. And I'm thinking now that, you know, my family has a lot of money, and I could have a nice life, you know. Why am I here in the woods walking up and down with my bleeding feet? How about if I go home and forget about all this, because it's a lot of trouble and I'm not getting anywhere. And so then the Buddha, who's some distance away, he knows what everybody's thinking. He's like Santa Claus, you know. He knows when you are sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows when you are good or bad. So be good for goodness sake. Well, Buddha is Santa Claus like that. And he knows that this is exactly what Sona is thinking. And then, and I love this, it says, just like a person bends their arm, you know, just like that, that easily, the Buddha suddenly appears in front of Sona in the woods. He just magically appears over there. And he says, I noticed that you were thinking this. Were you thinking that? And Sona says, yeah, you're right, I was thinking that. And then the Buddha, who is very Socratic, you know, Buddha always, just like Socrates, he doesn't tell you anything. He just asks you questions. So he says to Sona, well, let me ask you a question, Sona. You used to be, before you were a monastic, I understand that you were really good at playing the lute. And Sona says, oh yes, I remember that well. I was very good at playing the lute. And he says, the Buddha says, well, what do you think, when the strings of your lute were too tight, how was your playing? Was it good? No, it didn't work. When the strings were too tight, I couldn't really play. And what about when the strings of your lute were too loose? How was that? No, when the strings were too loose, it just sort of twang, you know, it didn't sound right at all. And you have to get it just to the right pitch, not too tight and not too loose. And Buddha said, that's right, Sona, you're exactly right. Too much effort leads to restlessness, one of the hindrances. You get upset when you make too much effort. Too little effort leads to laziness, one of the other hindrances. So in making effort, you can actually encourage the hindrances if you make effort that's too tight or too loose. So you should have just the right pitch for your attunement so that the five faculties, the five powers, will arise when your effort is right at the right pitch. And Sona says, okay. And then just like a strong person could bend their arm like this, just like that, the Buddha disappeared, back to Vulture Peak, and Sona finds himself alone again. And now he starts practicing with just the right effort. Not too hard, not too soft, not too tight, not too loose. And then, boom, he immediately becomes awakened. This is it. It's all done. I'm happy. Everything is great. And then he goes on and says a lot of stuff. But really, what he says, to summarize it probably unfairly, but more or less, what he says is, now that I've gotten to this place, there's no question about effort at all. You know, I don't need to make any effort. I'm just living. There's no special effort necessary here because everything has been let go of and I'm fine. And I see that the whole effort business was just a kind of, it was a crazy thing, you know. Why was I even worried about it? And that's the end of the sutra. He writes a poem saying that. Like I say, it's probably not a fair assessment of all the things he says, but anyway, for today's purposes, I'll put it like that. The message is clear. The metaphor is apt because, you know, your life is a song, right? It's not a slog. It's a song. And so you have to tune your instrument just right. You know, if you work too much, if you try too hard, your song is, you know, too, it screeches. If it's tuned too loosely, doesn't sound right. You have to get it just right. And in the end, and when you get it just right and you continue to make that effort, eventually you don't really have to make any effort. It's very easeful. And I think that's really experientially true in practice. I really have seen that, you know, in a lot of practitioners, that, you know, it's very hard in the beginning to avoid making an effort that's either too much or too little. You tend to err on both sides. And you can't even, like, you know, it's easy to say, tune it just right, but what does that sound like? Well, you have to be able to hear the sound, right? An experienced lute player hears, this is right, just right. And the same with you, you know, you're tuning the instrument of your life, and at first you can't hear that it's just tuned right. It's too tight, it's too loose, and you don't know the difference. But eventually, as you persist and keep going with practice, you can hear, ah, that's so obvious, that's too much. I'm just driving myself here, it's so obvious. And here, it's so obvious that I'm avoiding what I need to do, just being lazy. Of course, sometimes we need to relax and take care of ourselves, but now I'm being lazy. And you know the difference. And then you know how to tune just right. And then you continue to make that effort and you kind of get the hang of the practice and you begin to feel like you can keep practicing all the time, you know, in meditation and not in meditation. And then you can hear the sound and you can be tuning yourself all the time, because tuning is not just once and for all, right? And the instrument gets out of tune all the time. In fact, you have to be tuning it all the time, but it's very easy to tune it when you can hear it quite well. So I finish with a wonderful, one of my favorite lines from Dogen, where he's talking about the effort that we make in meditation. He has a poem, you know, called The Point of Zazen, or The Point of Meditation. And in the poem are these lines: effort without desire. A fish swims like a fish. A bird flies like a bird. So effort is, usually the word effort seems a little painful, right? Ugh, effort, I gotta make an effort here. But that's because we're looking for something. There's effort with desire to perform well, or to be seen as good, or to be good even. But here, you're making effort without desire. You're just making effort. You're just doing it without needing anything from it. And when you do that, you become yourself. You are a unique person. There's nobody who's going to do your life the way you're going to do it. Nobody's like you, right? So you're going to be, if you're a bird, you're going to fly like a bird. If you're going to be a fish, you're going to swim like a fish. And the thing about a bird and a fish is that the water that the fish swims in is endless. I mean, it's not endless, but it's endless in the metaphor. And the sky that the bird flies in is endless. So you will be yourself practicing and making effort that is effortless, because you are not trying to get anything out of it. You're just doing it joyfully as a reflex of who you are. And then you'll feel the joy of realizing your own life, which is an infinite thing, you know. It's like the water you swim in, the air you fly in, is without limit. There's no limit to who you are and what you do. And so it's a very joyful, freeing experience. So anyway, that's a little bit of what I thought about right effort, and that's the end of my little speech. And now we have maybe like 10 minutes or more to explore how this might mean something or not to you. So anybody who has something to bring up, go ahead, and we'll see how we can respond. Thank you for listening.